Session number 13452, reel number 1.
Mr. Moore, reel 1. You were telling me that you were born in Ash.
That's right, yes.
Is that your hometown?
Yes.
Where did you grow up?
Well, I grew up in Ash, 8 o'clock, 8 years old, I went to Farnham. The foster parents brought me up.
Did you go to school in Farnham?
Yes.
How old were you when you left school?
14.
So that was in 1928?
That's right.
Did you get a job?
Yes. Errand boy at Rogers at Farnham. And then that's... Then I came on to... I left that and went to work in the co-op as a baker. And then I left that and went into a glass and china shop.
What were you doing at the outbreak of war?
In a glass and china shop, wareysman. I was in charge of the wareys.
How did you feel when you heard the news that we were at war with Germany?
Well, that's when I decided to get married on the 16th of September, and when the war was declared, I had it put forward to the 6th of September, in case I got called up.
Were you dismayed at the news?
Well, it was a bit, it was a bit of a shock, really, but... We're more or less expecting it with Chamberlain coming back from Germany. I think it gave us a little bit more time to prepare.
Were you in? Was there any bombing in the Farnham area in the Blitz?
No, I don't think so. Now remember, my boss's son. He was a pilot in the Royal Air Force, and he came over the wareys one day in his Spitfire.
When did you join the army yourself?
1941.
Were you conscripted?
Yeah, well, more or less, yes. But you see, as I say, I was in the St John Ambulance, Aldershot's in St John Ambulance, and the six of us put our names down. The Royal Army Medical Corps, but only seemed that one had made it. But I thought to myself, well, they don't seem to want me, so I just waited to be called up.
What happened once you were called up?
A report to Inkley, and then to Burbage. And that's a little village where it's billeted in an old factory. And that's where we trained to be a storeman. It was the REOC, and I trained to be a storeman, and also we had a certain amount of training for combat work, rifle and everything like that, sort of combat work.
Then what happened to you?
Well, and then, as I say, at the end of the training, we passed out as storemen and that, and they came round and wanted drivers. And so I put my hand up for driving, and that's when all the unit moved down to Aldershot, and I went on to Gainsborough, and they moved off to Singapore, and as I say, the one particular mate, he died of malnutrition, and I went up to Gainsborough and learned to drive the lorries and things.
So it was the army that taught you to drive?
That's right, yes.
What kind of lorries were you driving?
Well, I started off 25 underweight, 3-tonners, 5-tonners, Scammels, the Bren carrier. And then I had a half an hour on a motorbike.
Was this the Royal Army Service Corps?
No, Royal Army Ordnance Corps. REOC.
What happened to you then?
Well, after I passed out for the driving, I was posted to Hucknall. Well, I went to Arnold first, because Arnold was the centre of the mob centre. There was Arnold, that was the main mob place, and then there was Hucknall, Bestwood, Bulwell, and I forget the fourth one, and they posted me to Hucknall. I was picked up by the 1500 weight truck from the station, railway station, and then taken up to the camp. And while when I was going up to the camp, there's all these trucks lined up outside the camp. And I went into the camp and used to go on parade, come off parade, and I was there 3 days. Nobody seemed to know I was there. I never had my name called out. So I saw this sergeant major, and I said, I've been here 3 days, nobody seems to know I'm here. And so he took my name, and that's when he came out. He said, you're bloody lucky, you should have joined the 57th ACAC battery. It went abroad, went to Africa 3 days ago. And so he said, you're going to join my unit. At that time, it was a 11th support group, 11th armoured deal. And they were just sort of just potted around. And he said, well, we want a Don R. So we don't know more drivers, we want a Don R. So they gave me a Don R kit, and I was learning the, you know, going out on the motorbike. But a little later on, a proper Don R come, Billy Walker, his name was, came in and took over, and they said, right, take your licence away. So I said, well, put me as a carpenter joiner. And they said, well, we haven't got a space. But the next day they gave me a box of tools, and I was just doing woodwork, you know, without being paid for it.
Did you know anything about woodwork?
Oh yes, I was self-employed, because I used to do quite a lot of woodwork. Well, I make a lot of things, you know, before I called up and that. I've never had an apprenticeship, but you know, a self-taught sort of thing. I had a lovely little workshop out there.
So you became a woodworker in the Royal Army Ordnance Corps?
That's right.
What did
Not in the Ordnance Corps, no. I didn't get the actual till the Remy form.
So you transferred to Remy?
Yeah, that was later on. Because we came from Hucknall. Hucknall, where would we go from there? Then we went to Radcliffe. That was another little place, and we were stationed up in a loft. And because we went there, and I had 14 days leave from there, and when I came back, they'd moved off to another place, and to Kirby Moor side. We moved off to Kirby Moor side, and that's where I started making these little model vehicles for the sand trays. All the units had these little models for helping them with their convoy work. There was about three or four of us on this for weeks, making all these little models, and they spread them out all over the different units for the convoy work.
What other kind of carpentry work did you have to do apart from the sand trays?
Well, when we got to Heddon, I was working on Colonel Roberts. He was the GOC of the 11th Armoured Div, and worked on his office on wheels. There was about four of us. It was two fitters and two carpenters. One carpenter, rather. Sorry, didn't get the two carpenters. It was me as carpenter and three fitters. And built the office on wheels, and then he gave us 48 hours leave, because we were on a 48 hour alert at the time, and all the boys quite peeved about it. And that's when we, you know, then often while we was working, you know, doing different odd jobs, repairing different things, and that's when we heard the bombing of Hull. You know, see the old night time, mostly it was.
Was that the heaviest bombing that you had seen so far?
Well, except Coventry. Coventry was very heavy. And then Hull. And because while we were at Heddon, in the field next to our workshop, there was, what they call them, these rocket launchers. And they were sending them up quite a lot because they were terrific. You know, they'd have about, oh, must have been about a double dozen barrels, and then you'd see all the rockets going up. And they were terrific, they were.
Did they do any good against the enemy planes?
Well, I couldn't say what happened. You know, you'd just hear them go off, all shooting off for somewhere. Where they were going to, I don't know. It must have been planes, I should think.
Where were these rocket launchers sighted? In Haddon or outside?
In Haddon, yes, in Haddon, in a field.
Did you go into a hull to see any of the damage?
Oh, yes, we used to have a liberty truck going in. As I say, you'd sometimes go in and find a lot of shops missing what you knew and a lot of damage done.
What did the morale of the citizens of Hull seem to be like?
Well, they seemed quite good when we spoke to them, like shopkeepers and that. They seemed to be keeping their wits about them, like, you know. They seemed to be quite cheerful about it, although they had to go through it quite often.
Did any of the bombs fall in Haddon itself?
I don't think so.
Can you tell me about the bombing of Coventry as you remember it?
Well, as I say, we were called out and we had to get into the shelters, and all we could remember is the bombing, you know, the actual bombs going down and the sound and all the flames, you know, all the sky was all lit up.
Where were you?
It was at, say, Burbage then, in Leicester.
Did you go into Coventry?
Not at that time, no. No, as I say, we're too busy, you know, school, training for storming, and then doing air combat work, you know. We had, I think it was 6 weeks training.
I think you said you missed 3 drafts altogether.
That's right, yeah.
What was the third draft that you missed?
That's the one later on. It comes when we were at Kilverston. That comes on later on.
What happened to you after Haddon?
Haddon?
That was in 43, I think you were at Haddon.
That's right. Yeah, we came down from Haddon to Malton in Yorkshire. Went up to Yorkshire. And then, well, we were just doing normal general duties. There wasn't very much woodwork to do there, just more or less general duties and guard duties, because we were on guard quite a lot at that time. And then we come from there. Then I had another leave from there, another 14 days leave, and then we come back. There was rumours that we were going to move to Guildford. And not a few days afterwards, we moved down to Guildford. You know, to Guildford, Surrey. And we were in the clockhouse. And the actual workshop was down in Barnes's garage. And that's where we was used to sing our song, "You Are My Sunshine."
And which units were you in at the time?
It was still the 11th, 11th Support Group, 11th Armoured.
It was called the 11th Support Group REME.
That's right, yeah.
In the 11th Army.
No, not REME, REOC. 11th Support Group, the 11th Armoured, because the REME didn't form till 42.
But this must have been after 42, because you were in Haddon, you said, in 43.
No, Haddon was 41.
What happened to you next?
Well, from Guildford, that's when we went up to Thetford. Thetford, that was when the REME was formed. That would be the October the 1st, 1942. the RIMI was formed, and then we became the 159 Infantry Brigade Workshops, 11th Armoured Div.
Can you tell me about the preparations for going to Normandy now?
Yes, we came down from there, we went into Aldershot. We're in Aldershot on D-Day, and that's where Alf Scales, my old mate, I think they left about D-Day 4, and we were preparing, you know, getting ready, waterproofing the trucks and getting ready for Normandy. And as I say, Air Advance Party moved off, I think it was about the 4th of December, 4th of D-Day 4, I've got it wrong, D-Day 4, and they pushed us out to Bisley, being a big workshop, and that's where we were still getting ready for Normandy, and that's where I was fitting racks to wagons for the jerry cans, and that's where I got a piece of metal in my right eye. And
in an accident.
Yes, and that's I wonder whether that started my eye trouble, you know. And because the MO got it out, and I had my eye covered for 3 days. And then we was getting, you know, as soon as we got all prepared, and then we left Bisley on the 5th of July, moved down to we stopped in Orndean, and we stopped in a little camp there in the, on the side of the road as overnight, and then moved off on the 6th down to Gosport and landed over into Normandy on the 6th.
But the accident to your eye didn't blind you?
No, it didn't. It just got this bit of metal, and I think when I first had the trouble with my eyes, that I wonder whether this bit of metal had started the trouble, because that was the first thing they said, we can do nothing to your right eye, and they said look after your left, but it's the left one that's gone quicker.
Which beach did you land at Normandy?
Gold Beach.
On which day?
7th of July. 6th of July rather, sorry, 6th of July. And remember the landing ship opened up, and we drove up the beaches, and the first thing I saw was Tracy Surmer, and then we went up this little roadway, turned left into a field, de-waterproofed, and that's when a couple of Spitfires went over chasing a 109, and then these guns opened up, and we could see no guns for a minute, and then all of a sudden we saw these three guns coming on the A-stacks. And that's all I can remember that day. And then on the 7th, the next day, I think it was Bretville, Leorgville. They brought a tank in with two burnt up soldiers, and we couldn't find them. We had to get them out. And that's where I made the two crosses for them, because one of the chaps painted the British unknown British soldiers tank regiment. That's all they could put on it, because we can find no identity disc. You see, we had two identity discs. One was green, which wouldn't burn, and the red one wouldn't rot or something like that, but it would burn. See, they had one, the green one wouldn't burn, but would, if it got wet, it would rot like, and the red one wouldn't rot, but would burn like, sort of thing. But as I say, it...
Did you have to remove the remains of the bodies from the tank?
Yeah, they were badly burnt up, yeah. We wrapped them in blankets and buried them in a shallow grave, and then put these crosses up to show where they were.
It must have been horrific.
Yes, oh yeah, it was.
Was that one of your responsibilities, to take dead bodies from the tanks?
Well, just after that, they made me medical orderly. Just after that, no, I was doing all the first aid work after that.
This was still in RIMI?
Yes. And because At Thetford, I went on the two trade tests. I had a second class trade, a third class trade test, and a second class trade test. That was in Thetford. Then I started getting paid for doing the work. Carpentry and joinery.
Was that the only tank from which you removed dead bodies?
The only one, yeah, that's the only one we took. But I used to out get shells out of the tanks, you know, when they were coming in. But I never took any more bodies out, actually.
How did you get the shells out?
Well, we used to, the one used to be, you know, one in the tank, hand them down, and then I'd hand them over to somebody else, and then we'd put them into a pile.
How dangerous was that?
Well, very dangerous. You started dropping them around. We had to be very careful.
This was the unused ammunition, was it?
That's right, yes. They bought a tank in damage.
Did anybody have an accident doing this kind of work?
Yeah, well, my old mate, Alf Skulls, that was in Udom in Germany. He was in a tank, and a lorry went by and caught the gun and trapped him in the turret, because on the tank, the gun had to be a certain way so the driver could get out. But my Alf was in, partly in and out, because it kind of crushed his face. Because they called me over being the orderly, but the time I got over there, they got him out, because I was over the other side, you know, taking the shells out of these tanks and that. And time I got over there, they'd got him out and sent him off to the MO. And I think he went back to Erdkenbosch, and then back to England.
So you were chosen to do this orderly work because of your Red Cross training?
That's right, yeah. Because when we were in Helmond, that was, we had a sergeant, I forget what his name was, he got trapped, his leg crushed in the breech block. He had the breech block back, and he had his leg in between the carriage and outside the carriage, and the breech block suddenly flew in, crushed his leg. Because I had to get the recovery wagon to pull the breech block out again. And I done him up for a crushed leg. And luckily enough, there was a young officer there. He could speak German, as a matter of fact. And I had a German first aid kit as well. And I had no idea it was morphia. And so I asked him what it really was, and he said morphia. And so I gave this sergeant morphia, and because I'd done him up. And then put on the time morphia was given, the time of the accident, and I got quite a bit of praise when the driver came back, and he said, you know, the old MO was quite pleased with it. He said, I'm not going to touch that, he's going straight back to base. So it was a feather in my cap. So I wrote to my St John's headquarters in Aldershot and told him all about it. And then there was another chappy, I think that was at Almond, that one, but I can't remember the others. And then there was another chap, he jumped off the wagon and broke his leg. I had to do him up, send him away. Then I had a driver mechanic, he was working on the car, and somebody pressed the button, started the belt up, and took the top of his finger off. I had to do him up. And I went to the MO with him, with a staff sergeant, the staff sergeant drove, and because coming back we got a puncher. And so what actually happened, he said to me, can you change a wheel? I said, yeah, I had a driving course way back. I said, no, I've done it, and I changed the wheel. And because I got another recommendation, when he got back, he told the major all about it. And that was it. And I don't quite know when I got my stripe, though. That's forever. When I was made up to Lance Corporal. It must have been when we were going to Antwerp, I should think. Somewhere around about Antwerp. Because when we... then, as I say, I had another sergeant. He caught his finger on a quad. That's the vehicle that used to drag the 25-pounders around. And there was a seat you could alter, and he trapped his hand like that in the seat. And I think he lost that finger, actually. I've done him up for a fracture of the finger. Just the next day he came into the workshop, and he said the bandage was causing him a bit of trouble. And so I done it up again for him. And the next minute, we had a letter from him from England saying that he was in Basingstoke. So I gave him my auntie's address and told him to get in touch, but we never heard from him again. And I think he must have lost that finger.
Were you also dealing with battle wounds?
Yeah, well, that's when we went into Branville. I don't know why they put us up amongst the SP guns there, and there's like a wagon there, and then an SP gun, another couple of wagons, and then an SP gun. Because when the SP guns opened up, the Jerry's fired back, and because there was they hit one of their trucks, and there was two of the men on there. Well, it was my mate actually. He was the corporal, and and they called me over. I was farther up over there working on another vehicle, farther over, and they called me over because they'd got Bill Cubbins, he was a Lance Corporal, got in, they were taking him over to the MO. Then I got my mate Bob Ennis, and we got him done. I'd done him up for, you know, took my field dressing out of my helmet and done him up, and we took him over to the MO because he came back. And got back into the little slip trench with another mate of mine, and another shell came over into the sand pit where the SP gunners had their cooks. And I said to him, I said, "Oh, better go down and see if there's anybody hurt." So he said, "You stop here," because the next one come over straight in the same place. And I think there was some casualties down in there, so I turned around and shook hands with him. Because I think we left a couple of vehicles behind that were badly damaged.
So you were working really quite separate from the Royal Army Medical Corps people?
Oh yeah, I was only just doing the actual, you know, just the own unit, my own unit for first aid.
Until they could be looked at by the RAMC.
That's right, yeah. We'd get on to the MO.
So you'd landed at Gold Beach and you'd gone to Ronville. Mm-hmm. Anywhere else in Normandy that you operated?
Well, Ranville. Can you switch off for a minute just to...